Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Anyone who's taken a flight recently knows how bad it has become, especially in New York City. JFK and LaGuardia are the top two most delayed airports in the country, with Newark not far behind. So everyone agrees that the system is inefficient, not to mention infuriating for passengers. But what's the solution? For the U.S. Department of Transportation, it's auctioning off prize takeoff and landing positions. Yesterday, it announced it will auction off two slots at Newark that were once occupied by the now defunct airline EOS. This after the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey said on Monday it would block any airline that bought auctioned slots from using terminals at the three metro airports. The two agencies appear headed for a showdown in court. Here to help define the terms of the debate is Jim May, president and CEO of the Air Transport Association. And later we will have Michael Levine, formerly a government regulator and senior airline executive who now teaches law at NYU. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show, both of you.
Hi. Thank you very much, and I'm delighted to be on with Michael.
And I'm pleased to hear from Jim.
Jim, let's start with you. Bring us up to speed. What's the federal government's auction plan, and why is the Port Authority moving to block it?
It's not just the Port Authority. It's every significant member of Congress with anything to say about aviation policy. It's all members of the Department of Transportation's advisory committees that looked at this scheme. It is the Port Authority. It's the airlines. There is universal condemnation of this because it adds taxes and does not accomplish the fundamental goal, which is what we're all concerned about, of increasing capacity at the New York airports. You have correctly stated that they are the most delayed in the world. 80% of the delays in the United States originate in New York.
Oh, boy.
And what we want is to find ways to increase capacity, not simply employ an economic theory that will add congestion, not take away. These two slots are at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, let's back up a little bit, Jim, though.
Sure.
How do airlines get slots at airports?
They've either had them forever. There are slots at LaGuardia that have been around for 40, 50 years, or they buy them from other airlines, or they are opened up by the Department of Transportation and they bid on them through the Department of Transportation. Mike was there at DOT when a lot of this occurred, and in the past he's probably better qualified to discuss the process with you than I am.
So, Michael Levine, let's go to you. These slots, who owns them? When we talk about bidding on them or airlines, it sounds like from what Jim May was describing, there have sometimes been a process in which airlines purchase them from the Department of Transportation when they're opened up, but then once they buy them, they trade them among themselves?
They've never been bought from the Department of Transportation, but they have been given to people who have been using them, and then those people have been allowed to sell them. Look, there are two problems here that we need to separate. One is that we have a lot of congestion that is producing waste, and it's waste of passenger time, fuel, generating emission, wasted aircraft and labor time. And the second problem is that the slots we have aren't being used necessarily to maximize their value to passengers.
Give me an example of that. What do you mean by that?
Well, for example, you'll have an airline that won't be able to schedule a flight for 300 people in a 777 because a business jet is landing or because a flight from a small city upstate with 20 or 30 people on it is landing or using the slots. And obviously it'd be great if everyone could use everything all the time, but, you know, that's not the world we're in, and we don't use them to maximize the passenger value of them. And there, to solve this, you really, it's actually a more complicated problem than it looks like. First,
go ahead.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, you might be going exactly where I want you to go next. I understand you're in favor of the auction process, but you have some criticism of the way the federal government is going about it.
Well, what you could say is I'm in favor of market mechanisms, and in fact would favor a kind of auction, but it wouldn't look like the one that the FAA wants to do currently. First of all, you need to understand, auctions won't solve the congestion problem.
Which is Jimmy's point.
The making the slots most valuable, the passenger problem. The congestion problem can only be solved either, and this is a no-brainer, you either reduce the number of scheduled flights to levels that minimize delay, at least in good weather, or you add capacity. Ideally, one would do both at the same time, and the lines would cross, so that we would eliminate some of the waste that we now have from scheduling beyond capacity, and we would add capacity to accommodate as many flights as we possibly could. The second thing you would do is make airlines use slots to maximize the value of travelers without suppressing competition. Let me come back to that. The basic problem is that special interests stand in the way of all this kind of stuff. The airlines don't want to pay for what they already have, and they're afraid they might lose slots they need.
Michael Levine, Jim May, Michael Levine said exactly what you said before. It won't solve the congestion problem, that the only way to do that is to reduce the number of flights. But I believe your organization, and I know your allies of the airline industry on Capitol Hill, like Senator Chuck Schumer, has been calling for a greater investment in new air traffic control technologies and more air traffic controllers.
It is the ultimate answer to the question. Mike said it as well. Look, you currently were capped at all three airports at 81 to 83 operations an hour, some minor adjustments to that. We need to serve the greatest economic center and engine that this country has, which is New York City. We schedule to demand. We need not to limit capacity, which this failed DOT policy is doing, and then add congestion by throwing more flights in at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But we need to change the infrastructure. New York airspace hasn't been redesigned since the 60s. And we need to redesign the airport's space. We need to deploy next-generation air traffic control facilities. We need to make sure that there are sufficient number of controllers and that the relationship between the controllers and the FAA is a positive, productive working relationship so new procedures can be put into place. We need to open up military airspace. There are dozens of things that should be done that fall under the heading of where should the DOT be spending its time, and it's on increasing capacity to accommodate demand, not in some failed economic theory that they don't even apply in the right way. Well, Jim is half absolutely right. They should be spending their energy on what he's describing, and unfortunately, even where they have spent their energy on it, those same politicians you're talking about have stood in the way of implementing some of the solutions. There's a so-called East Coast airspace plan already designed that has been blocked by the New Jersey congressional delegation because it will have airplanes flying probably inaudibly high over the estates of people in affluent suburbs who haven't seen airplanes over them before.
Correct.
The amount of political interference in this process is really unbelievable. But the part where Jim is half wrong is that the fact is that the caps that we have right now are a wastefully high level of schedules that produce delay even under optimal conditions.
And we
really need to reduce the number of schedules allowed. No airline wants to do that because they're afraid their schedules will be reduced and someone else's won't be.
And we invited the U.S. Department of Transportation to participate in this conversation, and they declined. We would like to hear from you, listeners. You've heard both sides of the argument from Jim May, President and CEO of the Air Transport Association, and from Michael Levine, formerly a government regulator and senior airline executive who now teaches law at NYU. Give us a call, 646-778-3729. That's 646-SPUD-RAY. Which side are you on? Do you think there should be an auction of these arrival and departure slots? Do you think there should be a reduction in service, a cap on service to JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark? Or do you think there needs to be more flights coming in, more options for passengers? Give us a call, 646-778-3729.
Can I jump in here a minute? And
sure, Jim May, yes.
I was in New York on Monday on business, and Mike makes the case that a cap at LaGuardia of 81 an hour is not efficient. I can appreciate what he's saying. By the same token, I came back, and I was frustrated, as many citizens are when they're just sitting on the tarmac and long lines waiting to take off. You'll recall that Monday was a beautiful day. There were no weather issues whatsoever. And I came back to the command center at the FAA, and I said, how many operations were you able to accomplish at LaGuardia on Monday afternoon when I was flying? And it's rated at 81. Its overall capacity is much higher than that in perfect conditions. But they were executing about 59 operations at the 4 o'clock hour. That's unconscionable. There is no way that we should be able not to at least meet the targets that have been established by the FAA and that the airlines have agreed to, which is 81 at LaGuardia.
I would agree that if they can be met, they should be. But I'm not as certain as Jim is that they can be met.
But remember, Mike, it's not the airports, it's the airspace. And part of the accommodation that needs to be made is for the probably somewhere in the range of 50 to 55% of all traffic in and out of New York. And there are 15 airports in that airspace that contribute to that airspace, is private corporate traffic that's going in and out of there. So it is the airspace redesign that is needed to accommodate all this demand.
I was talking about special interest, and the private guys, the corporate guys, don't want to even pay their own way. So that is a real problem.
Michael Levine and Jim May, we want to bring some of our listeners into the conversation. Michael from Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. Just a simple comment. I'm not an economist, although I've studied the subject at Harvard College and MIT later on and was a banker. What this really comes down to is not a failed economic theory, but it's a very basic economic theory, which is that there's a limited resource, which applies to electrical generation or apartments in New York City or spectrum, and you need a mechanism to allocate the scarce resource. And furthermore, in this kind of situation, it's sort of obvious that not all slots are equal. I mean, the 7 a.m. flight to Chicago for a businessman is worth more than a 11 a.m. flight slot to Chicago. And if one is worth more, then there ought to be a market clearing price, and that's what an auction type mechanism is designed to accomplish. It may not be perfect, but fundamentally, you have to have some way to recognize the difference in value in these different time slots. And for corporate jet with an executive on it wants to fly somewhere and bumps a 747, then he can pay $50,000 or whatever it is, and that's his privilege. That's all I have to say. I'll take the comment off the air.
Thank you, Michael, for your comment.
Michael is absolutely right. The problem is that we don't have perfect markets. We need to understand that the Port Authority is a monopolist. It collects a huge amount of money from even the airplanes that are sitting on the tarmac waiting because the passengers all buy hot dogs and park their cars and so on. And they don't want anyone messing with their money. The airlines are worried about being taxed when they already are in financial crisis. You do need an auction, but you need to do it right. In my opinion, the money that comes from the auction ought to be given to the airline whose slot is taken away from it, and then they should be forced to bid blind for the slot if they want it again. And we need to pull some of those slots out of service if that's what's necessary. When you get toward the right level and you get the politics out of it and you avoid simply taxing airlines that probably can't afford to be taxed anymore, you can really use auctions, and you ought to use auctions.
Jim May, is there any way to get politics out of this? If you, Port Authority has pointed out that what this will end up doing is probably reducing flights from smaller markets like Syracuse and Buffalo, and of course there are constituencies to in those areas, and they have their representatives on Capitol Hill. But as Michael from Brooklyn was pointing out, not all flights are of equal value.
I fully understand the argument. There is no way to take politics out of this situation. It is at its core political in nature. I think Mike Levine pointed out that these slots are going to be created by a process of confiscating them from the airlines. They're going to be taken away. Some of these slots have been operated by the same airline for 40 or 50 years in and out of these airports. They're then going to be sold to the highest bidder. That value under the winner under the DOT proposed system is going to have 5 years to operate it, and then they get confiscated again. So it's nothing more than a taxing scheme proposed by the DOT. It is the furthest thing away from a pure auction. There is an allocation process that is in use throughout the entire world. It's called the Worldwide Scheduling Guideline. It's used at congested airports like London, Heathrow, et cetera.
Oh, Jim, that's an incumbent protection plan.
Gentlemen, I'm going to take a moment here. We've got some news in about a military jury convicting bin Laden's driver. A jury of six military officers at Guantanamo Bay reached a split verdict today in the war crimes trial of a former driver for Osama bin Laden, clearing him of some charges but convicting him of others that could send him to prison for life. The Pentagon selected jury deliberated for about 8 hours over 3 days before convicting Salim Hamdan of supporting terrorism. He was cleared of the conspiracy charge. Just wanted to bring you up to date on this latest news. We'll take another call. Bill from Queens, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just a quick question. I actually work at the JFK, work for an international airline. I've been in the aviation business for about 12 years now and worked at five airports. And what I want to talk about is disruption and weather handling, because I've never seen anything like it. In the past 2 months, I can tell you I've had three cancellations because our aircraft will push back, taxi for 3 to 5 to 7 hours, and the crew runs out of time, and we just have to cancel the flight. And what I don't understand is why there's not more focus, especially considering the amount of fuel costs, that they prioritize wide bodies over smaller regional jets and propeller planes. You look out there in any kind of, and you'll see a 747 and then a small little 320 or a regional jet. And why can't there be some kind of focus put on, okay, if you've got 300 passengers on your plane, you're going to get in this line and go first. And if you have 25 passengers on the plane, you're going to wait until all the other big boys are up and done.
Bill, thank you for that call. You're breaking up. I think I can paraphrase for Bill that he's wondering why there can't be a prioritization of flights in bad weather. Jim May, why don't you tackle that first?
Well, I think in part it's the politics of the system that we've been talking about, in that, you know, if you're flying to Buffalo, New York in a CRJ, as far as you're concerned as a passenger, you have as much right as the fellow who's sitting on the 777 getting ready to go to Paris. There may be more individual customers in that 777, but that doesn't mean that they have any greater rights than the fellow going to Buffalo. That's number one. Number two, I think the underlying issue here is congestion during inclement weather. And what we need is a next generation air traffic control system that not only enables us to maneuver around traffic in the air, but can be applied at the airport level to better assist the control tower in managing that traffic on the ground so that we don't have the kind of extended delays and bad weather that we've seen.
Jim, is this technology operational, and do we know that it's going to achieve all of these bells and whistles that you say it's going to do? Clear up the skies, make every plane fly on time, more stranding on the tarmac because we've hired more air traffic controllers and we've gotten better technology. And how much is this technology going to cost, and where's the money going to come from to pay for it?
Well, about five questions there. One, it'll never be perfect. It's run by humans, and that's the nature of the system. Number two, it is in use at different airports all over the world today. We're dreadfully, woefully behind the rest of the world when it comes to implementing next-gen technology. Three, there are systems that can be applied, ADSX, at the airports themselves that are in use that are very positive and allow us to manage traffic on the ground. Four, the whole debate that Mike referenced about the inequality of payment is the one that Congress has got to take up to have funding for this next generation system, which at the end of the day, six, is going to cost about $40 to $50 billion, and is going to be split between users of the system who have to equip their aircraft and the FAA who have to put in new equipment on the ground.
And that's where we will leave the conversation.
You're
Jim
not
May,
going to let me get my 2 cents?
No, 15 seconds, very brief. 2 cents,
well, very
15
quickly,
seconds.
The problem is with the system right now is it's not evenly applied. Foreign airlines get special exemptions. We give special exemptions to business jets and all the rest of it. Whatever technology we use and whatever auctions or whatever we have ought to apply to everybody.
Thank you. That is Michael Levine, formerly a government regulator and senior airline executive who now teaches law at NYU. He's joined by Jim May, president and CEO of the Air Transport Association. This debate is going to continue. Who has jurisdiction over this issue? That's a question that will probably be settled in the courts. We are taking your comments online at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
You are more than welcome. Bye-bye.
Coming up, trolls on the internet. They're not under bridges anymore. I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Stay with us.